Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This week on the program, we've got a great interview with a guy that a lot of fans know, Kenny Farr, the football equipment administrator for the Oregon Ducks, joins the pod. We get to know Kenny and the importance of the equipment staff. The program starts now. Welcome into the program, Dusty Hara, Cole Linehan. And we've got the college football playoff national championship game tonight, Cole.
Yes, we do.
Ohio State.
Do we care about it?
Notre Dame. And that is our college football playoff championship game preview. It's going to be a tough one to watch.
It is. It just doesn't quite have the same, enthusiasm as I did about college football, like many Oregon fans. But, you know, Ohio State, I hope they win, and I hope they win big, and I think they will.
Yep.
Maybe it won't age well, but, you know, that's it is what it is going forward, you know.
Well, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, it may have a different tune.
Yeah.
But
I have moved on to the 2025 football season.
Yeah. This week, though, we were doing our previews. We did our offensive kind of unit previews last week. We will get to defense and special teams. Thankfully for us, all the things that we said, this could be dated. None of it was dated.
Yeah, absolutely.
over the course of the week. But this week, we've got a long interview with a guy that a lot of Oregon fans know, the name Kenny Farr. He is the football equipment administrator for the University of Oregon. He's the guy, I think a lot of people know him as the guy who is in charge of the uniforms and all the equipment at Oregon. Ducks versus them and that team out west did an incredible job of highlighting what he does and his staff. And we got a long interview with Kenny that I think people are going to love.
Yeah.
But the equipment staff is something that the value to a football program is so much higher than I think anybody quite understands from the outside looking in. He is one of the guys that kind of runs a portion of the program that if they're not there, it looks entirely different from game preparations to game days.
And he has such a cool story because of where he began, right? Like, he was an Oregon guy that started as a student equipment manager back when, you know, Oregon wasn't known for all their uniforms and all their everything that we have. You know, he stepped away for a while, and then, you know, he kind of tells a story about it, but then he came back and started taking things over and hasn't looked back since 2008. And so it's cool because it's the equipment managers don't get the love they, you know, I don't think they need it, but they deserve it.
Yeah.
Right?
They're like offensive linemen.
Yes, they are. They are because their story, like the things don't get done unless they're there.
Yeah.
And that goes from preparation for practice, you know, in practice time, like the amount of work they put in before practice, people don't understand. The amount of time they spend at practice running around like crazy, like, you know, getting, you know, everything you would ever need, right? Yeah. Setting the ball, being ball boy stuff, like getting all the equipment. And it's just all the little things that just, they just, like when you're a football player at University of Oregon, you just think they magically get done.
Yeah.
But they don't. right? They have a crew that's a well-oiled machine that does it all for you, so you can only focus about being the best football player you can.
So it's like getting your laundry done for your practice stuff, setting up every drill, making sure every drill runs efficiently, then gets cleaned up, and the guys are just going from one drill to the next over a two-hour practice. Then it's the breakdown of all the equipment, putting it back away, getting it set up the next day, prepping the footballs, making sure cleats, jerseys, pads, everything is to every player's spec. There's a lot that goes into it that nobody ever talks about.
Yeah.
And that's why we wanted to bring Kenny on. He is really dang good at what he does. And I don't think there's a lot of fan bases across the country that know who their equipment guy is, but Oregon fans do, and he's got a pretty dang important job, and it's an awesome conversation because he's a really good guy, and I hope you enjoy this conversation we had with Kenny Farr, the football equipment administrator for the University of Oregon. Really happy to have our guest this week on. He's a guy that a lot of Oregon fans have become familiar with over the course of the years. And I don't know if there is an equipment administrator that many fans know. But at the University of Oregon, everybody knows the guy that we're going to bring on next. Kenny Farr, equipment administrator for the University of Oregon football program, and a guy who's been a Duck through and through. Kenny, thanks for taking a few minutes for us, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Look, with the University of Oregon, it's always uniforms. It's the cutting edge of technology. And you've been a guy that you're at the forefront of. And I thought one thing that was really cool is through the uniform design process and everything that got rolled out this year, especially the videos that came out, you guys did an amazing job along with Nike and the players that helped design them. But this is something that you've got to be a unique position to anybody else that's your peers because of how important equipment and uniforms are to Nike and the University of Oregon.
Well, it's been that way for a while. You know, we've been on the cutting edge of this, you know, doing this kind of stuff for almost, you know, about 20 years now, you know, thinking about when we started really unveiling multiple helmets and jerseys. And that process is really unique. Usually, you know, it's cool when these things unveil like this season because, you know, they usually start, you know, you usually start those processes 18 to 24 months out. So it's actually like all the work leading up to it to where actually, you know, you get to see that stuff on field. So it's a really cool process and a lot of people involved. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to, you know, our creative team here who does such a great job of, you know, putting that stuff out when we, you know, we design and make some really cool stuff and they figure out a way to make it look extra cool when they release it to the public. So
kind of take us through the process, you know, starting before we get to see that rollout, right? I mean, like, when does it start and how does it start? Is it your crew kind of saying, hey, this is the vision we have, or is it Nike coming in and say, this is what the vision we have?
It's a little bit of, it happens a lot of different ways. So we have a lot of like, I guess you would call them kind of like think tank sessions with players, and we're really kind of going off, and those they start a lot of different ways. Sometimes the Nike designers will come in and they'll say, like, they'll start asking that most players want to wear something that they grew up seeing. Like, I really loved when you wear Volt back in 2010. I really loved when you wore Pink back in 2013. Or, you know, they want to do stuff that we've already done. And sometimes it's more to get them off of the kind of the throwback stuff. It's, hey, they start with conversations like, what's your favorite superhero? What's your favorite car? What's your favorite color? And getting them kind of thinking creatively and coming up with ideas. Really, they all start with stories. So we want to be able to tell a story and then design the uniform around the story. So it's not just it looks cool. Like there's some kind of meaning behind what we're doing and why we're doing it. So that's how they start. Then they, you know, you go through many, many of those sessions where you're kind of fine tuning things. Sometimes it's the best answer is to like say no to something or, hey, that's not the path we're seeing it. At a certain point, you get coach involved and like he sees it the same way. And then you kind of move from there until you get to the end. And we're on a kind of a 3-year cadence of full sets of uniforms. So this is the first year that we did our Generation O set of uniforms. So we'll have a full new reset on in 27. And we're already working on that. And then when I say 3-year set, there's always like an energy moment every year. So we'll have another new uniform next year. And then the year after that, and then 27 will be all new. So They keep me busy around here.
Now, how often do people say no? Like, what does that happen? Where you guys say that's not us?
Who says no? There'll be five options, and you got to pick the best one of those five.
Okay.
And so you're saying no to four, basically. So, or you know, you may be like, oh, that just, I don't. There's been a few of those over the years where it was like, I just don't see that as something we want to do at this point. And you know, sometimes that's, you know, part of that whole design process. So, and I can't take a lot of credit. I'm not an artistic person per se. I have a lot of experience doing this, but I'm more of a liaison of information. So I take input from the players and I get everybody in a room, and then I kind of mediate the meetings and maybe share history to certain things or ideas for stories, that kind of stuff, and let the people that are really creative work the magic. So
now, one of the things that I love is they show the little bits and pieces of the meetings that you have with the players where you guys were going through and you were sorting out what uniform you were going to wear each week. They show the really nice parts where everybody's all happy and nice. Do those ever get contentious and you have that bickering back and forth? Because all players, they all have their opinions, and they're really strong opinions on look good, feel good, play good.
Well, and it's interesting you bring that up because, you know, some years there's three members. There's always an odd number, just so if we have to comes down to a vote, there's it's majority wins. The more people you have in the meeting, the longer the meetings go, because there's differences in opinion. And I have all positions represented. Like this year we had an O-lineman, two receivers, a DB, and a linebacker. So, you know, you got all positions represented. So one uniform may look really good on a receiver, but the O-lineman's like, hey, man, like I'm not wearing, you know, that's
all
not,
white.
That's not my vibe, man. That's not my vibe on the, you know, whatever that might be. So the meeting's really long. And this is obviously after we already know what the palette of what we can wear is. And so now we're just picking game by game. So we'll have that meeting here coming in a couple months with this year's for 25 season, that committee. I haven't selected those guys to be on the committee yet, but there's a lot of potential candidates that have expressed interest. So I'll pick those guys and we'll get down in a room. And, you know, that meeting's usually 2 to 3 hours, depending on – this year's was really long. There's five, and so it was a long – by the end of it, I was like, all right, I'm tired. Like, these guys are – and it's a lot of laughs. They can only show certain parts of it, but it's a good time.
Now, do you ever pick – as you're going through that selection process, are you going with guys who might be stylish on the team, or do you go through and you pick, you know – having like a country guy on there who doesn't really care about what he wears, having someone like that, or what's the personality makeup that you have to go through?
It's usually pretty easy because those guys are stopping by my office and telling me like, hey, I want when I'm ready. And then you got to have a certain amount of status and seniority on the team to be on that. Last year was all seniors, going to be seniors. So they were on the committee. And then this year, it just kind of depends. Some guys are, you know, from the day they stepped in here, they wanted to be involved with everything. And that was part of the appeal for them to come to Oregon, was the relationship with Nike and getting to do this stuff. The really cool part about it is all the people that I work with at Nike, or most of them, like in footwear and, you know, a lot of different places, all were former players here. So they were all on the committee at some point. So they kind of fully understand what's going on. And they, you know, there's definitely an interest on both sides and some of the stuff we can do. And they know those stories of those guys that have moved on to careers at Nike. And so that obviously piques their interest as something that they would like to be involved with and have some influence over. So,
you know, when we were talking about having you on, I was looking forward to it because I feel like, talk about behind the scenes, right? Like, you guys are absolutely the unsung heroes of a football program, to the point where people don't understand. Like, when we would show up for practice, everything would be set up, right? Mm-hmm. When we showed up for games, our jerseys would be on our pads, taped. Everything would be in our lockers. Like, everything magically just got there and magically was just always ready, always prepared, you know? And so there's so much that goes on to it. Can you kind of bring us through, you know, a day in the life of all the things that you guys do to help prepare for teams, for practice, for games, all those things?
I mean, it's really like collecting information. So, you know, obviously we understand our responsibilities to make it as easy on our coaches and our players as possible so they can go out and have the best practice that they possibly can. And then in game day, that they don't have to worry about, you know, anything that they may need or that they might not have. So we're just basically just trying to eliminate any kind of issues that possibly could be. And presentation is really important. So we want when the coaches show up at practice or the players show up in the locker room on game day that it looks clean and it looks nice and it looks like something that, you know, that you'd be proud of, you know, and you know, just kind of sets the tone for the team as far as what, you know, we're going to go out and play or the kind of practice we're going to have. And that's just the kind of the standard we have. So logistically, yeah, there is a lot that goes into it, especially now in the Big Ten. So we're already kind of planning this year. You know, we got some really long trips out to Rutgers and Penn State. So, you know, obviously that, you know, the logistics involved with it's a little bit of planes, trains, and automobiles, getting all this stuff out there and, you know, having it for practice and then turning it around and being ready to play. But driving it 3,000 miles across the country is there's some logistics involved. But, you know, I've done this long enough now that I've kind of done, you know, way back in the day, we took the truck to Virginia and we've done, you know, a bunch of long trips. We just have a few more of them, this, you know, each year now. So, but it's a fun, so we take a lot of pride in it. I learned under some really good guys that kind of, you know, were mentors to me, like Ed Garland and Pat Conrad, that really showed me, you know, how the pride of, you know, what we do. And I have a lot of peers around the country that, you know, I'm always observant of what they're doing and, you know, just trying to keep that standard high. And the better job you do, the, you know, it's the better for all the guys around the country that do what I do. So, you know, you just take a lot of pride in it and you know, just try to be a strength for our team. You know what I mean? And that's something that our players and our staff can count on.
That was something really cool that I thought that team out west and Ducks versus them did, is they highlighted the importance of the equipment staff and essentially the crew of guys that you have, because all of that stuff magically appears, like Cole said, because you've got an army of students that go through. Can you take kind of people through that process of what it takes to become one of the equipment managers on the team and go through being a part of your staff?
Well, so it starts with we there's a lot of interest now, obviously, with team success. A lot of students see what we do, see videos like that, and they're like, man, that's something I want to be part of. And we certainly appreciate that. But the hours that go into it. So on a quarter system, like we are here at University of Oregon, like these kids are showing up like the 20th of July and then working all the way through, you know, hopefully in an ideal year, January 20th. So you got to imagine there's not very many days off. There's not very many holidays. There's very few days off. So you're giving up half your summer to come be a student manager and work in Eugene, Oregon for 6 weeks with no school. And all that to be at every practice, to do all the things that need to be done every day to prepare our team to play from the equipment side. And you know, those guys sacrifice a lot. And it's definitely a different college experience for those guys. Just, you know, they spend so much time working in here that they don't, you know, like going out and having the nightlife and keeping their studies up. There's only so many hours in the day. So the kids that work in here do a great job. But we basically have a volunteer process where guys volunteer. And then basically the tryout to be on a full-time equipment manager for us is during spring ball. So we'll, like this year, we have 4 open spots. And I think we have like 9 or 10 kids trying out for those. And it's basically, and it's not always the kid that works the hardest. Sometimes it's, you know, we have 16 students, so it's like who assimilates best in the group and who can work the best and who, it's not the hardest worker, it's who makes the team better, really. So, you know, we don't expect kids to know everything right away, and we want to understand that. But, it's a really close, we're really close, tight-knit group. We spend more time together than we do, like with my own family. I'm spending around these kids in college. And I also, you know, went to school here and was a student manager here. So I definitely have a respect for what that's like. You know, it's a lot going on when you're, you know, 18 to 22 years old and, you know, you're working. Sometimes these guys, even during school, are working, you know, there's 50, 60 hour weeks sometimes. And these guys are working hard and putting in the time and at every practice and everything. And so with that, you know, they're part of the team. So they know the players intimately and you know, it's a big group, giant family, and they get taken care of and they're out there running drills and involved and everybody's assigned a coach and we just, you know, get to the next day.
Yeah. And look, it is a well-oiled machine, because when we went out to Michigan this past year, they got this old like gatekeeper, and this guy was like, this is the most efficient group outside of Army and Navy. And he goes, those are military institutions. Yeah. He goes, these guys, they get their job done. They're efficient, they're quick, and he said they're respectful. So, I mean, it's not just like that team out west kind of just putting a spotlight on them. They did it because they're really good at what they do. So, mm-hmm. and recognized by at least the Michigan staff, they were blown away at how efficient you guys were in setting up the locker room the day before the game.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a fun trip, man. It's always fun when you win.
Yeah. So now, how do you decide who gets to travel with the team? Like, is there?
It's a little bit of, you know, we don't really do it by like, oh, the seniors get to travel or the mm-hmm. upperclassmen. It's basically, you know, those things are established like in anything. Like the guys that do the best and are the most responsible get the most responsibility, and then those are the guys that we travel. So we usually travel 7 out of 16. There's a couple spots that will rotate guys each trip just to get some experience for these guys, because in a year from now, they're going to be one of those guys. So,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of I work really closely with my assistant, Devin Kramer, who does a fantastic job. And we kind of, you know, we're very strategic about that and, you know, and what you got to do, because during the game, there's a lot going on between ball boying on the games, and then you're dealing with coach to player stuff, and not only that, but you know, in a locker room like you were talking about earlier, Cole, it's like you're taking 4 or 5 hours to set up the locker room, sometimes 6, and then after the game you got to tear it down and get it loaded up in like 45 minutes. So it's like an all hands on deck. Like you know, when I get on the plane after the game, like I'm wore out, that's for sure. So.
Yeah, that was the thing that we didn't really, until I actually maybe truly understood how things work. It's just when you're young, things just happen for you, right? And yeah. Like kids just don't understand how good they have it because of a good equipment staff that just take care of everything, right?
And, yeah.
And it helps them to get ready for the game and not have to focus on their stuff. But it's just it's a different world for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I literally try to make it, and that's the thing, is I want to make it as easy as possible for them to be the best player they can be. So whatever I can do, if that's 1% of whatever it is, I'm going to give all I can to try to make it 2%. You know, yeah. Like that's really the way I look at it, is I'm just take a lot of pride, and you know, and it's something that's unique because I really like care about the place. So I'm going out of my way to, because I care about work, and you know, I want our guys to be successful, for our team to be successful, and our coach to be successful, and you know, however I can help do that is what I'm willing to do.
And that's something that you said. You were one of these guys. You yeah. were a student equipment manager at one point, and then you've kind mm-hmm. of worked your way up. How did you end up at Oregon? And you know, your path from, you know, North Valley High School. I yeah. see the Knights hat on right now.
Let's go. Wow.
Yep. North Valley and GP. That's coming right. up to the University of Oregon and now establishing yourself in the position you've been at.
Well, I would say this. Like, I, growing up, you know, a big thing for me was 1989. We went to the Independence Bowl, and like that was a big deal, you know, because it was the first bowl game in a long yeah. time. And, you know, I was a big Bill Musgrave fan. And for whatever reason, I just loved Oregon. Obviously, pride in the state. Just like, I take the same amount of pride in the Portland Trail Blazers, because that's like our only pro team. Like, that's my team, you know, forever. And so I just loved Oregon. My senior year in high school, we'd play Friday night, and my best friend and I bought season tickets. And I think they were like, I want to say they were like $70 general admission in the end zone for the season. And we'd drive up and go to the games and then drive home, you know, in 2 hours. And I just knew that that's where I wanted to go. It's funny too, because I'm old, but you know, and this is 1997. So I applied to school, got into school, got on my financial aid. I got like work study and stuff. And I was like, man, I don't want to work in the cafeteria or something. I'm just going to email the athletic department. And I think I emailed somebody like in the business office, but they forwarded their email down to Ed and Pat. And I got an interview, and like, by the grace of God, man, they hired me. And I did that I was on that good 5-year plan, because I didn't want to, I enjoyed it, man. I really loved it, and stayed there. And actually, when I graduated, I left for like 5 years. So I went out and I managed retail stores, and I sold mortgages for a couple years. And then I just wanted to be happy. I was like chasing money when I was younger. And then I just realized I really wanted to just chase happiness and do something I was passionate about. And I came back actually when they brought baseball back. So 2008, and I worked for Coach Horton in baseball for 1 year. And then Coach Kelly brought me over to football, and you know, my first year with football, we went to the national championship. So it was kind of wild. And to be honest with you, like I, you know, it's a little bit funny because I, you know, you get a job and you're 5 years as a student manager, but you only know so much. And then you are 5 years out of the business, 5 or 6 years. And then you come back and you do baseball. And then you're like, yeah, you're in charge of football now. And like, I had no idea what I was doing, but you know, sometimes the people, you know, they trusted, you know, and so sometimes it was, hey, I'm not sure, but I'm going to find out. And, you know, it was kind of, you know, just me learning on the fly and, you know, on a really good team and have a lot of fun. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. So stayed through here. So counting Coach Blatty, you know, Coach Lanning's my sixth head coach and numerous assistant coaches, my tree of managers that have gone on to professional, you know, equipment managing jobs is pretty robust now. So I take a lot of pride in that. You know, they're all over the NFL and in colleges everywhere. So, it's really cool, man. And a lot of those guys look about their experience at Oregon as, you know, it was something that, you know, kind of changed their lives. And, you know, and I hope that, you know, I played a part in doing that for them. So.
Now, when you say six, I mean, six coaches, that's significant in terms of like, I mean, I'm sure every coach is a micromanager where he wants things done a certain
sure.
way. Like, how much have you changed through each coach, or is it kind of like, hey, this is how we do things, you know, and this is how I'd like to continue to do things?
No, there's no, and they're all different personalities, but a lot of it is you do your, like I said, you're just, you're like a liaison of information. So I'm doing my research. As soon as we hired Coach Lanning, I called the guy that I knew from Georgia, Gage, and just picked his brain on, hey, how does he like things done? What does he call things? Terminology is different. You know, what do I need to look out for? And then when Coach Lanning came and we started running practices and walkthroughs and doing all that stuff, I had numerous calls to him. Like, I'm not really sure what he's talking about here. Anything you can enlighten me on? And you really just get used to saying it's never like, hey, this is the way Oregon does it. It's yeah. like, hey, what do you want done? Like, I'll do whatever you want. And there's been many different ways to do it over the years. You know, each coach has got their certain way they want things run. And you know, I mean, you just get used to saying yes, sir, and figuring it out. So. That's really what I kind of preach to my guys is the only thing you can really control is your effort and your attitude. So it's just your attitude towards change, and it's inevitable. But I believe in the place, and I've had plenty of opportunities to go to other places, but I just never wanted this to really feel like a job. So I was like, man, and I always felt like it might if I left it. So I never wanted to, like, when you got something good that you really care about, it's just hard to leave. I've got a young family and they enjoy living in Eugene and, you know, friends and all that stuff. So it was nearly never really about me. I just really felt fortunate to have to be in the position that I was, because sometimes timing's everything in life. Like, I just happened to find the right time when there was a spot available and I was here, and Coach Kelly just was like, yeah, you're my guy now. And that was wild too. Cause that was like a innovative, like time of the way people practice, the way that, you know, things are going to be run. And so you're kind of learning, and he's the mad scientist. So it was a little bit of, you know, figuring out and deciphering the language and just getting it done fast paced. And so, yeah, and you just adapt to each coach you get.
I think that's something that when people think of like equipment administrator, they think chin straps, girdles, cleats. No, it is the administration of practice, even in every piece of equipment that is there, from balls to blocking pads and all that.
I can imagine what Chip was like just with, based on how fast paced he was and how fast you guys have to work. It's like setting the ball, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we used to run a series called Fuji where it was just like fast paced, you know, the 2 minute drill, and coaches, I mean, the equipment guys were sprinting to get the ball, get it set, and they were working their asses off the entire time.
You just gotta do what it takes, man, you know, and then coach will let you know if he wants something done different, that's for sure. So, you know, we kind of figure it out as we go, and we built a really strong culture in our room here. So it's, you know, when guys come in, they, you know, they either figure it out or they don't, you know what I mean? But there's plenty of kids that are interested in doing what we do. And so, you know, we just make it happen, man.
I assume that's been like a big change. Like, you just said that you sent an email to the athletic department and by happenstance, it ends up with EQ. Mm-hmm. Now, like the change in the evolution of what it can do, and you're putting guys into the NFL, like you're saying, you're getting guys that are seeking out Oregon's equipment staff and trying to be a part of it. How much has the industry changed since when you took over, not just in 08-09, but as a student manager to now, and just like how much more dialed in and how much more they're asking of that staff?
Well, college football is so different now compared to when I started in 97. It was, you know, back then we had six students, the team, like you would have all the newcomers show up the couple of days before camp started in August. Now we had, I think we had 12 guys go mid-years go with us to the Rose Bowl. So new players. So you're not only playing for the Rose Bowl, but you're adding 12 new players to the roster. So you're trying to figure out, you know, getting them all situated and trying to make a really solid first impression on those guys when they get here so that, you know, they feel welcome and, you know, you're in the, you know, you're in the middle of prepping for the biggest game of the season. So, you know, that's part of it. Then you will add probably we added six or seven more since we've gotten back from the Rose Bowl. And then we got three or four more coming in April and then three or four more coming in June. So your roster just is always constantly in flux and you're trying to manage that and make sure everything's taken care of. And then, you know, you're getting into football is just a year round sport now. So it's, you know, these guys start on Tuesday next week with their, you know, the winter workouts, but the mid-years that we have, I think we have 18 of them now and on campus. So they've been working out since we got back. So there's just never, it just kind of never stops. And that's what it takes to be great at this level where we want to be. And, you know, the staffs are much, much larger than they were. We used to, back in the days when I first started, we'd fly all the equipment under the plane. But now we bring way, way, way too much stuff to be able to do that. We need like a C-117 or something from the National Guard to fly it all out there. So if you guys know anybody, that would be helpful.
Nick Reed. Yeah, we can get Nick Reed to do it.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I don't know if it all fit on a stealth bomber.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. It would get there quick. It would get there quietly. Yeah, so it's just constantly evolving, and just college football in general is. Yeah. Like I said, our staff size is much larger than it used to be, and, you know, everything's a little bit more specialized. And, you know, gosh, with the transfer portal and that kind of stuff, the roster turnover is much, much bigger than it ever has been in the past. And so, you know, and that part is a little tougher for me. And the only reason I say that is, like, my favorite part of my job is the relationships. So, you know, you try to be a positive influence on kids. They're getting here, and you go around our locker room and look at the nameplates on the lockers, and everyone's from everywhere. Like, it's a melting pot of all, you know, we got about 25 states represented in our locker room. It's crazy. Maybe not that many, but a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, so these kids are coming here and they're not used to being away from home. They're 18 years old. They're getting here and they're getting here in the middle of bowl practice. And it's like, man, and you get to see those kids grow up and help kind of help them throughout their years and just visiting with them, checking on them, making sure they're good. And then, you know, gosh, I have guys that I've been here long enough now that they come back 5-10 years later from when were players here, and, you know, they got families now. It's just such a cool evolution to see, just guys grow up, go on to the NFL, go on to careers, doing whatever they're going to do, and come back. And there's a familiar face, somebody that, you know, they knew when they were here, because you guys, as you can imagine, every time there's a staff change, it's like wholesale, like there's not very many people left. So there's a few of us that have kind of, you know, they've kept around, you know, through all those staff changes, and you know, I like being part of one of those guys.
Yeah, that was kind of something I was looking for, right? It was somebody who's been through all of these different coaching staffs and all of the changes of college football. Have you noticed a change in just players in general since the NIL, since, like, you know, all the changeover of the transfer portal? Like, just kids have to do, they, you know, do they approach the game differently? Is it more business-like in everything they do? Or is it the end, they're still just college football players?
I think I mean, you have seen some subtle changes, but I think these guys are still, you know, their ultimate dream is to get to the NFL or, you know, into their career. So they're motivated. Obviously, some of these kids are, they got a little bit, like, back in the day, there would be on a Friday, like in February, there'd be on, you know, you'd see a kid like at the cooler up by the locker room, just taking like 30 Gatorades home. So he had something to drink because he'd spent all of his stipend already that month. But Cole, now these guys can afford to do a little bit better than that. And that's great for them, you know, and I'm happy for it. But I don't, you know, Coach Lanning and these guys do such a great job of bringing in like high character kids, and we have a really, really good team culture, man. I will say, of all my time being here, like, there's never been a more fun time to be an Oregon Duck than right now. And that's even me with me saying, like, there's some of those longer term relationships. Like, some of these kids I only get for 9 months, you know what I mean? So it's, I don't get to know them as well as maybe some of those guys that I got for 4 or 5 years, but it's just, they get acclimated to our team environment and the way that Coach Lanning runs this program. And it's an awesome time.
That's what I figured, you know, like back when we were playing, all we ever wore was Oregon issue, but now maybe with this NIL money, maybe these guys are wearing something besides.
These guys got some stuff now.
Yeah.
It's nice, you know? But it's just the normal stuff though, that would happen when I first started to now, you see the same, you know, I mean, there's the same mannerism. They're just 18 to 22 year old college boys. So these guys, the same, you know, they're just the same. Maybe they got a little bit more money in their pocket and they drive a little nicer car, but they're, you know, they like to goof around and have fun. And they're into, you know, when I get them new cleats and new uniforms and stuff, they get excited about that stuff. So it's awesome, man. Yeah. You know, and I'm thankful to be part of an operation where I can be, you know, helpful for them, not only as football players, but in just in their lives.
Now, when you think of, you know, for where the program is right now and everybody, you know, like coaches, former players, fans, like it just feels like, you know, Coach Lanning is different. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think makes him different than everybody else or the other coaching staffs that you have worked for? Or why is he so successful?
I tell this to people a lot, but just the thing, he's just such a, like, a normal guy, like approachable, friendly, jokes around. He jokes around with my student managers all the time, knows them all by first name. He's very charismatic. He's an excellent, like, teacher. You can tell that both of his parents were teachers. He's like, if you go out into practice, the way he teaches and stuff is just an excellent job, does an excellent job of like explaining things, like to even when, you know, guys like me that have been through a lot and know a lot of football, but I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. And that's pretty cool. I think part of it is, you know, if you know his story, and I know a lot of people do, from him starting as an elementary school PE teacher, small school, the struggle that he had just to get a GA spot at Pitt and then work his way up to where he is now. Like, I think the respect that he has because he kind of came from the bottom all the way to where he's at now, like, he recognizes the contributions of everybody along the way. And he really, you know, I believe him when he said he wants everybody to be successful, whether that's here or taking a job somewhere else. Like, he wants to help people. And I just think he's a genuine person and somebody that, like, man, I'm super grateful that we made the decision to hire Coach Lanning. And I think our program is forever better for making that decision.
You mentioned that he brings in high character guys and high quality guys, and some guys that you said you only know for like 9 months. Dylan Gabriel is like one of those guys that just popped into my mind, because you want to talk about a guy who is, you know, could be the most high maintenance guy in the world. He seemed like he was super low maintenance for you. And quarterbacks, they can be very particular with their footballs, especially in the way they like them. What has it been like to kind of go through that process where, like, you're seeing this short turnaround with guys like Bo or Dylan, and you guys got to work pretty closely with the quarterback, especially because of all the things that they need?
So it's interesting, like in a Bo Nix or a Dylan Gabriel situation, like those guys that have played a lot of college football and been in a lot of big atmospheres, like they kind of know what they like and what they want. So it's literally just like everything. It's just sitting down and talking to them and asking what they need, and then just jumping through every hoop you can to make sure you achieve that. And sometimes it's like with footballs with Dylan this year, we probably went through, I want to say 7 or 8 iterations where we'd be like, yeah, this is the one. And I'd get a bunch of them in and he'd be like, this isn't it. And then we go back to the drawing board and you just keep working at it until you find something that makes them happy. And like I said, that's just the attitude and the willingness to, like, to cross every T and dot every I just to make sure that he feels the best he can on Saturday. So there's so much else, other stuff to worry about that. And especially now in the NIL area where these guys have, like, they got agents and they got a lot of people wanting their time. When you're number one in the nation for several weeks, it's like there's a lot of pressure on these guys. So just the equipment room is kind of a safe spot. Guys are welcome in here all the time. If you ever come in the equipment room, it's very low key. It's almost like a barbershop feel. It's like, guys joking around in here and having fun. So it's a kind of a safe spot. It's not even in the same building as the football building. So guys kind of let their hair down in here and have a good time. And that's part of the culture of, you know, guys, you know, that's how you get all the really good information, how guys are really feeling and kind of help navigate them through maybe some hardships they're having in their life or, you know, whatever, you know, situations may be affecting the team and you just try to, you know, sometimes you kind of feel like you're team psychologist / equipment manager. And I kind of relish those opportunities just to have that kind of influence and help our team.
Yeah. If you really want to get a pulse of a football team, you go to the EQ staff or the training staff.
Training staff.
Chief
and Travis.
Yeah, exactly. Those guys know it all.
So. And you know, the training room is right next door. So yeah. we get a lot of traffic through here.
You know, that was something that we've had a couple guys on who gone on playing the NFL. Max, mm-hmm. Max mentioned this, Max Unger, Schwartz mentioned this in that there's a lot of jealousy in NFL locker rooms because of the gift boxes that come from the University of Oregon, because they're sitting there and they're like, where did this come from? Do you put those together?
So I do. Yeah. So, and I take a lot of pride in that too. And there's a few reasons. One is like, I just wanted to show those guys how appreciated they are. Number two is like, I'm hoping maybe their teammates in the locker room have little brothers and they may want to come to Oregon.
Yeah.
it's something I just take a lot of pride in and making sure those guys are taken care of. And obviously it's, you know, usually well received and those guys are, you know, super grateful for it. And yeah, so there, a lot of planning goes into that. That's just one of those deals that I started, you know, gosh, I've been doing it for a while now, but. Yeah,
Did Oregon actually start that? Because I know a lot of programs do that now. But
Was it? I don't know if we started. I think we were on the the front edge of that one for sure. But now it's pretty prevalent. But yeah, we try to do our best stuff for those guys. And you know, obviously, man, we got some cool stuff around here. So you know, regardless of how much is in there, what it is, it's like I take care of them, man. I try. Those are all. But you got to understand, like those are those are my guys, man. So like, I want them, even though I don't get to talk to them every day like I used to, like that's just my little, you know. Another thing that people don't know is like Coach Landing writes a handwritten note for every single one of those and puts it in the box, you know, and these are guys like he may have met once or maybe never met them, but he knows who they are and we talk about it. And he always does like a handwritten note that I put in that box for him just to know that, you know, Coach Landing does such a great job of like welcoming former players back into the program and having them around and coming to practices and just being around. So it's, you know, it's one of those things that certainly doesn't go unnoticed.
So being in the program since 2008 and actually before that, do you have a memory that stands out the most? Like either a game or a moment that just, when you think of your time, or just what you think the most fond of?
Gosh, that's a hard question. I think one that sticks out in my mind is the Rose Bowl when we beat Florida State was a big moment for me. And the reason I say that is we kind of always got this like, and even for me, I think personally, it was like, man, we won some big games and we in these big moments. But that was the first time where it was like, you know, we played a team from the South that was, I think they were defending national champions and they had won like 20 something straight games in a row and we kind of whooped them. And I just remember just being so proud of like how far the program had come, because when I started in 97, I remember we used to look at the schedule and be like, man, I think we can get 6 wins this year and go to the bowl game. Like that was really where it was at. I do think too, like Autzen back then was a little different. Obviously this was pre-expansion of Autzen, but I just remember feeling like the fans really felt like they could have like impact on the game. Like it was rabid. Yeah. And not that our fans are fantastic now, but it was just like a different mentality. Like, hey, these guys really need us because I don't know if we can stop these guys. I just think back to, you know, and that was one of those moments where I was like, man, we are really like, we're really here. Like it's come so far from, you know, 89 and 94 and all those years that I've followed so closely that I was like, wow, like it's hard to imagine getting to that point. And then you're all of a sudden in that game. And in the middle of the game, you're like, wow, we're up by like 30. Like this is crazy. Like what? So I think one of those moments, obviously, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be in 2 national championship games and just like the atmosphere is just it's so different. Those games, even the Rose Bowl, those games are so different, than anything like regular season because there's so many, like there's so much, the half times are way longer. The pregame's way longer. The TV timeouts, there's like a million of them, and they're like 4 minutes long each. And so the game just feels like so drawn out. And it's just like a different vibe in those things. Ultimately, like all the Rose Bowls we won are like special. Like, and to be honest with you guys, my favorite experience ever at Oregon is like when you win a big game on the road in the locker room after the game is like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just to see, I mean, you're talking about grown men and superstar alpha male athletes that are just acting like kids, like just so joyous, man, that like, it, like when we won the Big Ten championship this year was one of my favorite, it was all time just celebration. It was so fun. It was so fun. That 30 minutes or whatever, like it's amazing, man.
You've seen a lot. And a lot has come through, and Oregon is known for the uniforms. What is your favorite uniform that has come through?
Well, my kind of, I get asked that one a lot, but yeah. My go-to answer on that one is anyone we win in. you know, I'm just because I've been here for so long, like the throwbacks we've done, gosh, we've done them a few times, but yeah. We did it twice last year with the old, you know, Donald Duck logo. That just is nostalgic for me. So that's probably my favorite of all time. And it just has a lot of memories involved with it for me, just from all the great players and good friends that I've had over the years. And so that one just has special meaning to me. But we've done some really cool stuff over the years. You know, and some of the coolest uniforms we've ever done, we actually didn't win the game. So it's kind of like a little taboo to, like, talk about it. So I was just like,
Whatever we win in. So,
yeah.
I know. When we were seniors, or all throughout college, we begged for the throwbacks. We wanted them so bad. And the very next year, of course, right? The year after we graduated, they do the throwbacks. So. Well, hey, man, one of my favorite questions to every interview we have is we ask the same one, but what does it mean to you to be an Oregon Duck?
Well, it means everything to me. I just feel like really like I was telling you guys earlier, like timing is everything in life. And I felt like kind of God laid out like a path for me and opened some doors for me that I didn't even like, it didn't make sense for me to be back. And it just worked out that way. And I ended up back here and like, man, I just feel like I was telling you guys earlier as well. Like I've had plenty of chances to leave and do all this stuff. And I just care about the place. So it's a little bit different when you just have passion about the place you work and that you can really like devote extra time and just wanting nothing but success for the people involved with this program. And that means former players and then new ones coming in that I take a sense of pride in being like, hey, you're never going to come to a better place than this. And I'm going to be part of the reason that you feel that way. So that's just really kind of my approach to it and just how much I care about, you know, this school and this football program and, you know, and athletic department and just the state in general. Like I'm from the state. So like there's a special pride in, you know, seeing, you know, this state out in the upper Northwest, you know, go out and be one of the top programs in all of America, man. Cause when I was a kid, I could have never even really imagined that. Like, that's not going to be possible. Like, I don't know how that's ever going to happen. And thankful for a lot of people, but you know, Mr. Knight, of course, because I really don't think that we would have the opportunities that we had without his influence on our program over a long, long time. So, you know, it's a lot of hard work and a lot of efforts from a lot of people, but you know, with him being, you know, the person that, you know, kind of, you know, spearheaded a lot of this. So.
Kenny, we really appreciate the time, man. And this is exactly why we want to do this podcast is so we can highlight people like you in the program that mean a whole heck of a lot. Thank you for the time, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Kenny's a guy that I hope a lot of Oregon fans appreciate how good he is and what he does for the team, because that interview was a lot of fun to do because he's such an easy guy to talk to.
Yeah.
And you can see why players still gravitate to him. He's talking about, like, it's like a barber shop in that EQ room, and then the relationships they have after they're gone.
And it truly is, because, like you said, you go in there and you feel like you're not around your coaches and you're in a safe place. And college kids need that, right? They need a place that they can go, that they maybe they can vent and complain about the way that the coaches treated them or the things are going on at practice. And you have a group of guys that are just laid back and there to work and part of the team. And so it's cool. And you could, what I like talking about him is you could just feel how much he loves the Ducks.
Yeah.
Like, it is part of him. You know, he could probably be anywhere he wanted right now, being an equipment lead somewhere in the NFL, whatever, and he chose to stay home with his Oregon Ducks, and that goes a long ways. You know, and just to kind of put people's understanding of what, like, how it might work at a practice, like, guys would show up, like, I would show up, and you'd go to your locker, and your clothes would be there on the loop that you put on the night before, right? You'd put all your stuff on, and then when you're done with practice, you put your stuff back on this loop and you throw it in the laundry basket, and guess what? The next morning it's magically clean for you, right? And it's all ready to go. And so it's just those little subtle things. You know, you pack a bag to go to an away game, but when you get there, like, all of, you know, D lineman is required to have all of your pads taped to your jerseys taped to your pads because of holding, right? And so you get there and you're just, the placement was perfect. You'd walk to your locker and you would have every helmet was set exactly the same way. Every shoulder pads were set out the exact same way. And so everything was just so dialed in that, and it's just all those little things that they do that I'm glad we're talking about it.
Yeah, you talk about culture that Coach Lanning, it starts at the top. It does trickle down all the way down. And the culture of, like, Kenny and his EQ staff, man, those guys – They really do have a well-oiled machine, and they do have a lot of fun. Like, they setting all that stuff up, which could be monotonous for some, dude, they do a really good job at it, and he finds a way in a group of guys that he puts together that they mix well. And every single year, they get it done. They get it done quickly and efficiently. And we talked last week about how Wilson loved the strength coach and the importance of the strength coach. What you just said, though, is, like, having another outlet that's even one step removed from the coaching staff and the strength coach. You can always go to the EQ room or the training room, and you have those people, and having those guys that have been there for so long, like you mentioned, Chief and Travis in the training room, himself in the EQ room, they've seen so much of Oregon football over the years that they can really hone into each of the personalities of the guys that come to them with different issues or just to, you know, shoot the breeze.
Yeah, and you're not. He's not good. You know, the reason he's good at his job is obviously how organized he is and how prepared he is. But he's also good at people.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so important to be able to build relationships like that. Like, I was so close, unfortunately, because I was hurt all the time, but with the Chiefs and the Kims and the, you know, the people that the equipment managers, the Travises, because I spent so much time just venting to them about being hurt and, yeah. and them trying to make me not hurt, you know? And so, no, it was a great conversation, and it was just, it's just another way of showing, like, it's not just about the five-star players that show up, right? There's so much that goes into a football program that, especially now with the transfer portal and guys coming in and all the craziness that had happened, it's important to have a established group of the way things are done that you can always circle back to, right? And they have that there. They know that the practice is done a certain way. They know travel's done a certain way. They know the offseason's done a certain way. And you also, they are dependable people that you can always go to. So,
and it's all in the details, right?
Yeah.
Like those NFL boxes that we were talking to him about that we've heard about from some of our other guests. I think TJ also mentioned mm-hmm. it, right? You get like shoes, a shirt, a sweatshirt, whatever. They just send a box of your Oregon gear, and then Lanning coming in and putting a handwritten note. Those little touches that kind of push it over the top, and you know, it creates that atmosphere that you can always come back, and that's really important, and it is unique in to Oregon and what they have done over the last handful of years. So really cool. I hope everybody enjoyed that interview, and it was worthwhile.
Yeah,
because he's a great dude, and that definitely came across in the interview, and now people get to know him a little bit better.
That's right.
That's the entire point of this podcast. We're bridging the gap between the former and the new, and he can bridge both of those as a guy who went to school at Oregon in the 90s and has been there through the run from 2008.
Six coaches,
man. That is absolutely wild. Well, we will continue our roster and positional breakdowns as the offseason goes on. We got to get to the defense and we got to get to special teams. But for this week, I think we've done enough work, man.
Yeah,
that was fun stuff. We will see you next week on the program.
Go Ducks.